great to have Ivan and Noel along tonight, but because I don't really, I knew Ivan from Young Farmers years ago, that's going over 50 years ago, Ivan, too. But anyway, as a Mullane resident, I'd like to introduce Harold Flett to introduce Ivan to you.
Thanks, Norman. I probably don't need any introducing to anybody here. In my young days with my two older sisters, they went through school with Ivan. I think Ivan had actually left by the time I started in 1951. But Ivan was a long-time resident, and his father and grandfather before him there at Lane went through the Lane school as I did for a year and a half before I came to Donald. And Ivan will tell you the story of where he's gone with Lane's history from then. So I've heard it all. We've been down to Ivan and Noel's place and seen all the stuff he's got here. It's a very interesting story. So over to Ivan.
Thank you, Harold, and thank you, Norm. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Thanks, Norm, for the kind invitation to speak here tonight to you, and also the welcome to myself and Nola, my wife. I don't intend to bore you for an hour with a lengthy speech. I would rather the time was spent you browsing through what I've collected over on the table there. That's far more interesting than listening to me. There's a number of folders. There's a folder on the history of the Lane School, the teachers, the enrolment list of all the pupils from 1900 onwards. There's another folder with the happenings of Lane, and that's just incidents that I've taken out of newspapers, photographs, just interesting articles. There's 5 pages of highlights that was given to me by Mrs. Joyce Clark from Sheep Hills. She must have spent hours going through microfilm of old Minya papers, and the headlines make very interesting reading, and they go from 1880s through to 1940. That's just the headlines, but obviously that could be still looked up, anyone that was interested, but it makes interesting reading. Then I have photographs from 1900 to 1930 of residents that lived at Lane and their headstones. Then I've gone from 1930 to approximately 1950 of my generation, and I might add that there is no one, to the best of my knowledge, of my father's generation that lived in Lane still alive today. Someone might correct me if I'm wrong, but the ranks would be pretty thin if there's still someone. So it's my generation that has to document the history, because I'm sure my children are certainly not going to be able to do it. Anyway, I'll get on with my little summary. How did I become involved with the history of Lane? It probably goes back a few years. As a former resident of Lane, it was only after I'd moved to the Hamilton area in 1976 and then returned for an occasional visit that I began to realise how much that district meant to me. My grandfather settled there in 1903, brought up a family of 8 children. They all attended the Lane School. There is not one living member today. I was born in Minyip in 1938, grew up in Lane, went to school there, and later farmed there. After the school closed, my visits to Donald and Minyip most times included a drive past where the school once stood. The only visible signs now are a couple of plaques, and I used to look over the road where the hall once stood, and it got me thinking that some sort of plaque should be erected to show future generations that the hall, once the lifeblood of that district, should also be remembered. In the 1880s, when the area was first settled, those early pioneers had a set of priorities that we can all follow today. After selecting their block of land, They set about building a home to live in for their families, and then a church and a school were top priorities. Their religion and their children's education meant a great deal to them. And when the time came to build a hall, they didn't wait for a handout. They canvassed for donations from the district residents, got approval from the shire, and got on with the job of building it. It is noted from newspaper articles that in April 1886, the building of a hall was first suggested, and in August the same year it was opened. It's fairly obvious there were no disruptions during the building process. We cannot imagine the hardships in those early years. Isolation, lack of water, health facilities, refrigeration, and all the mod cons we have today that we take for granted, and yet through it all they prevailed. So it was over a cuppa after a funeral service in Donald that I approached Harold Flett, Dale Funk and Robert Loates with thoughts that I had in mind, and all were agreeable that we should make an attempt to put in place a plaque on the site of where the hall once stood. We had no exact dates of the opening and closing of the hall, so I volunteered to make inquiries. At this stage, I had no idea how involved I was to become in Lane history for the next 2 years. With no experience in history writing, where would I start? At this stage, I'd had no contact with either Minyip or Donald history centres, and I later regretted not having gone there sooner. But instead, I decided to go to the Mechanics Institute of Victoria in Melbourne, thinking I would get all the information I needed. They had absolutely nothing online. I was advised to go to the library and obtain the book If Those Walls Could Speak, which is a summary of Mechanics Institutes of Victoria, which was supposed to give a summary of all the halls, or Mechanics Institutes as they are known by. Well, I obtained the book from the library. Lane was in the index, and when I turned to the page, apart from Lane being in bold print, there was nothing. I might add that this will be altered, hopefully, because in my discussion with Miss Judith Wire, who is the Secretary of the Mechanics Institute of Victoria, she contacted Mr. Ken James and Pam Baraguana, who published the book If the Walls Could Speak. Ken emailed me and said they intend to do a revised version of it and Lane would be included. So he asked me if I would forward on him as much information as I could, which I did, and I sent photos of our unveiling. He said he wouldn't be able to put them all in, but they would put some in. So all our research has come to some benefit, because when the new edition of If the Walls Could Speak comes out, Lane will be included. After my visit to Melbourne, I approached the Donald History Centre and was assured I would receive all help possible in my endeavours. And my thanks must go to the wonderful volunteers here that gave me so much assistance and encouragement. It was your research that came up with the opening date of the Lane Hall from an article in the Donald Times. That was a start. We had a correct opening date. But when did it close? Sometime in the 50s was as close as I could come up with. And that's a lot of papers to look through. We thought we had to do better than that. I knew that the hall had been sold to the Imey brothers at Minyip, but they had shipped it away and since passed on. The only living member was Arthur's son Stuart, who was a very close friend of mine before he shifted to Esperance in Western Australia in the 1960s. So I phoned Stuart, hoping he would have the answer. But he could not remember either, and could come up with the years only 55, 56. Well, that narrowed it down. So I figured there was possibly a for sale advertisement in either the Donald Times or the Minyip Guardian. Back to the history centres, and both Minyip and Donald came up with the advertisement of the sale of the Lane Hall in November 1955. We had a closing date as well, 1886 to 1955. In that year, the hall was dismantled. The beautiful red jarrah floor was cut into four pieces for removal and was transported and reassembled as a shearing shed, 12 kilometres from Halls Gap on the Stall Halls Gap Road, where it remains in use to this day. And coincidence, again, it is owned by Lloyd and Earl Milgate, who are grandsons of an original settler at Lane, Herb Milgate. I took photos of the shed and the beautiful red jarrah floor put down in 1944, and I remember it being done. I was a kid going to school, 6 years old, and the men of the district were putting down this beautiful red jarrah floor, and when it was finished, us children were dragged around on wheat bags with kerosene and sawdust to polish it. But it's still in excellent condition, and there's photos over there of it in one of those folders. The next step was to obtain permission from the Shire and the DSC, as the site of the hall was on Crown land. And Harold Flett, being a councillor himself, knew all the contacts, and his assistance was invaluable in obtaining not only permission, but a grant to actually cover the cost of the plaque and incidentals. The next step was contact with the DSE, which Harold again took care of. They readily gave permission, along with encouragement, to go ahead with what we had in mind. After consultation amongst ourselves, Dale, Robert, Harold and myself agreed that a suitable plaque would be affixed to an implement wheel of some description in keeping with wheat farming that has long been the main enterprise of this district. Dale put forward the suggestion that a steel tractor wheel modified to replace rubber tyres and constructed by Smith Brothers Engineering of Minyip for use in the wet years of the 50s would be more than suitable. He knew one could be obtained from the farm of the late Jack and Rondella Vadova, so we decided that a wheel set in concrete with a plaque attached would be the way to go. Leaving Robert, Dale and Harold to organise that part, I again went to Melbourne, meeting with Judith Dwyer to get further details on plaques that the Mechanics Institute of Victoria used for marking halls throughout Victoria. And the wording on the plaque was discussed at length, finally settling on the inscription that is attached to the wheel. In addition to a brief summary of Mechanics Institute Victoria and also of the Lane Hall, it was decided that we include Ron and Jack de la Vadova, that they also be recognised for their lifetime of service and their generosity to Lane and surrounding districts. Now that's how Ron and Jack's name came to be on the plaque. Very fitting, I'm sure. As all these happenings were taking place over a few months, as well as taking photos of the hall, now shearing shed, I made a list of all the families that had lived in the Lane district from the early 1900s through to the 1950s, and thought, would it be possible to obtain photos of all those people? I did not intend to go to my children's generation, because they can do that if they so desire. At this stage, there's not much interest. But I dealt only with my and my parents' generation. Again, where to start? With the list of names I compiled, I decided I would go to the cemeteries, North Lane, Banyina, Minyip and Donald, where the majority of former Lane residents are buried. That way I would be able to get correct dates from the headstone inscriptions. I took my wife with on a number of occasions, and she had a lovely time reading a book under the shade of the trees while I wandered around the cemetery taking photos. It was an interesting exercise, and I learned a great deal about hardships and heartbreak that some of those earlier residents must have gone through. I debated about taking some headstone photos, as I thought I would have no chance of getting a personal photo. I was proved wrong a number of times and had to retrace my steps when photos come from unexpected sources. It's the old story. Don't assume anything. My grateful thanks to everyone that assisted me with my endeavours. It could never have been achieved without the cooperation of relatives and others that just wanted to help. I might add here that a website, Carol's Headstones, that I found quite by accident on the computer, saved me many miles of travelling, as this person has a comprehensive file on cemetery headstones throughout Victoria. So I was able, via email, to obtain from Carol, sometimes in less than 10 minutes, a photo I could print out from my computer of a person's burial place hundreds of kilometres away. And I did it a couple of times, and then I thought, well, how much is this costing? And I emailed her and said, now, what's the charge? And she emailed straight back and said, this is a free service, feel free to use it. Excellent photos that she sent me via email. It's the old story. If only we had started this research 10 years ago. But so many residents have passed on, taking with them so much information and history that can no longer be obtained. So our generation must do all we can to preserve our history for the future. What I have put together in the folders for you to view tonight has come from reading books on history of surrounding districts, newspaper articles, computer websites and war and army records. And as I stated before, another valuable contribution came from Mrs. Joyce Clark of Sheep Hills, who gave me the 5 pages of highlights of Lane spanning the years 1885 to 1940. From these headlines, I was able to research different articles for my history. Lane football teams, and with a great deal of assistance from the late Ron Wood, Harold Holloway, a former teacher, and the Donald History Centre, we've put complete names to those photos. Thanks to Dale Funk also, who suggested that the Lane Gun Club minute books and other history be given to the Minyip History Centre for preservation. Again, research into the club makes interesting reading, and legends like Sam Young and Jim Summerhays are noted for their outstanding contributions. It was also Dale that made sure the honour board of the 1418 war that hung in the Lane School is now housed in the Minyip RSL rooms. Another bit of Lane history was the minute book of the Comfort Funds. Some of you may remember that. I certainly didn't. It was established by the Lane residents during the 39-45 war period. And I have the minute book, which was supplied by Lynette North, formerly Lynette Westland, whose mother Marge was treasurer during that time. And it documents how communities came together in times of adversity. Food parcels and knitted garments were forwarded to those serving their country overseas. And as in times of war, some paid the supreme sacrifice. It's interesting, in the 1914-18 war, we had an honour board in the school. And on that honour board was the name of AWA Barber, Waddy Barber, who paid the supreme sacrifice. And he's buried in Gallipoli. On the computer website, through the army records, I was able to obtain a photograph of the Gallipoli War Cemetery, and it just showed rows and rows of headstones. Harold Flett's sister, Jennifer, was over in that same cemetery a few months ago, was it, Harold?
A year or two ago.
And you would not believe it, but they went through that same cemetery that I had the photograph of and came across the headstone of AWA Barber. So
the word Laen, L-A-E-N, took Jenny's attention.
Yeah. So, as well as having the actual photo of the war cemetery in that folder over there on the table, is the actual headstone of Trooper A.W.A. Barber. So, thousands of miles away, and just by coincidence, we've got a photo of. My earliest recollections of Laen started in my school years, 43 to 50. My first teacher was Miss Ali May Shaw, and she boarded at home for 12 months. She had no vehicle, so Dad suggested driving the horse and buggy, which she agreed to do. Dad would harness it for her in the morning, and from memory, Alan Evans and Alan Perks did it for her at the end of the day. How times have changed. As it was not appropriate for student and teacher to travel together, I rode my horse and Miss Shaw drove the buggy. Nearly every pupil either rode a horse or come to school by horse and gig. My cousin Alan and I, at 5 and a half or whatever we were when we started school, we would wait at the bridge for Jean Thomas, who was in her last year at school, and Jean would escort us then up the lane. She only did it for 1 year because she finished school then, and we were on our own after that. I was fortunate to have excellent teachers during my time at school, and two stood out, Roy Sturgis and Harold Holloway. They gave us a wonderful education. How they managed to teach 8 grades in one room is nothing short of a miracle. We had no air conditioning, no refrigeration. Our sandwiches were fairly warm by the time we got to eat them at lunchtime, and the summers were pretty hot in that little schoolhouse. There was no phone. We rode home in dust storms during the months of February. The nearest communication was Tom and Nell Lopes. How times have changed. The annual picnic was something we used to look forward to. We were given a holiday on that day, and the men in the morning would grade a running track down behind the hall with an old header wheel, while the mothers would prepare a feast for afternoon tea in the hall after the picnic was over. For the children, their treat was raspberry cordial, which we all look forward to. And from memory, the same treat was given at the end of the year concerts, which were always held in the hall. Right from the opening date, fundraising dances and concerts were held on a regular basis. Dances and balls attracting large crowds from Laen and surrounding areas. Balls going to 2 o'clock in the morning. In 1943, a new Jarrah floor was put down in the hall, and dances continued until after the war. But as is the case with the ravages of time, the rest of the hall deteriorated, and along with modern transport, enabling people to travel greater distances, and with more modern facilities in nearby towns, Laen and other little country halls started to close. Unfortunately, the entertainment that those early settlers enjoyed is coming to a close. Although I still play for old-time dancers around Hamilton, the age group attending has gone from the 20s and 30s, and I now play from the 70s to the 90s. And it is fairly obvious that my generation will be the last to dance the Foxtrot or the Pride of Erin. Sport was also prominent at Laen, and the district provided many outstanding performers in football, cricket, tennis, and live bird shooting over the years. Farming has changed from horse teams and wagons to massive four-wheel drive tractors, air seeders, 40-foot headers. Farms keep increasing in size, and a drive-through Laen now is so different, with landowners able to work vast acreages, meaning so many once sustainable holdings are no longer viable and have been bought up by adjoining landowners, meaning so many families have either retired to local schools or moved to other locations. No longer are there little country schools like Laen. Better roads have enabled bus services to take those children that remain to schools located in towns, sometimes many miles away. and how road conditions have changed. In the early days, they were all dirt tracks. In my school days, some gravel was starting to appear. In our late teens, we all got valuable driving experience on wet, muddy roads that were virtually impassable. Another legend of that era was the mailman, Wally Shearer, who delivered the mail between Donald and Minyip. He drove a canvas-top Land Rover, and although driving in atrocious conditions, got the mail delivered on most occasions. There have been many other quiet achievers in this district whose service has not been recognised simply because it's not been documented, and so a portion of history has been lost forever. When I think of the events that the likes of Kelly Millen, Bob Westland, Mrs. Andrew Della Vedova and Elmer Lotz could have provided, they could have compiled a history book on their own. As I indicated the day of the plaque unveiling, it was not my intention to actually write a book on the history of Lane, but that any research and information I have collected is readily available to anyone who feels they may be able to do it. So, whatever's over there on that table, if there is some way possible that we could get it onto a CD, if someone knows how to do it, anything that I've got over there, I would make available. It's probably beyond me. I don't have the skill, and I'm not up with the modern technology. I did mean to say, I think I may have missed a little bit here, about the Land Comforts Fund. I have included the opening minutes in 1939, and I've included the closing minutes of 1945, and I've included one other meeting, and it was the biggest discussion on, they were holding a fundraising dance, and someone suggested that they hire an orchestra from Donald. So someone booked up the orchestra, and they would only come if it was three-piece. So they had to take a three-piece orchestra. Three-piece orchestra today down around Hamilton could run into $500. They don't have them anymore. It's mostly someone like myself on a keyboard. But the cost, which they debated in the meeting, was 15 shillings each for each musician, and they also wanted 15 shillings for travelling, which amounted to £3 or $6 in our language. So it's how times have changed. But through all, even the tough conditions that they lived under, they were happy, they raised good families, and our children would never be able to go back. Everybody sitting in this room can still remember the Coolgardie fridge, Cool Safe, which was our fridge. I tell my children and they laugh at you, or they think, oh, you've got to be joking. But that's how they survived back then, and weren't they happier? I'm sure they were. It's been a memorable and enjoyable exercise to go down memory lane this far, but I'm sure that there are others that can add to the history of Lane. Many thanks again for your kind invitation for me to speak here tonight, and I'd like you to take the opportunity and go through some of the folders over there and see what I've put together. Harold, have I missed anything, or would you like to add?
I think you've done very well.
Well, I don't think I've got any more to say. I just thank you once again for coming here tonight, and I hope you find it interesting over on that table.
Thanks, Ollie. I would it's been very interesting and brought back a lot of memories. And so, any questions to Ivan that anyone would like to ask?
I was just wondering, where did the Landwehr eventuate from?
Well, my grandfather came out from Germany at the age of 18. He was sponsored out here by relatives from that lived out of Corumbie. And I think it was 2 years later, his brother was also sponsored out here. And they worked around the Corumbie district. I think they bought in the Boolite area for a short time, and then they came to Lane. And my grandfather settled in Lane, and his brother settled about 6 miles from Minyam. Yeah. And they were of Lutheran descent, and the church was 6 miles towards Corumbie from Minyam. So they had a 19-mile drive with a horse and buggy and five or six kids.
They went every Sunday.
Yes. Are any of the Landwehrs left on original selection?
Beg yours?
Are there any of the Landwehrs left on the original selection?
No.
No.
No, there's no one left. No. No. I shifted away in 1976, and I think is Anne Dunstan? Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You own part of it, don't you, Anne?
No, we did. No, we don't now.
Right. Any other questions? Well, I'll hand over to another Landwehr and call on Margaret to thank Ivan. Come into relations.
It gives me great pleasure to thank Ivan to come. Talking about the...
Thank you very much for
coming on. Ah, thanks, Margaret. I was talking about the safe, the Kilgallen safe, and we must have got a kerosene fridge, and it was always, don't put anything on top of the fridge. And to this day, I cannot put anything on top of the fridge. But thank you very much, Ivan.
Thanks, Margaret.
Thank you, Ivan. So that finishes the evening, so stop and have a cup of tea with us and enjoy the rest of the night, have a look through and have a cup of something to eat.